Case number case number 20 in the Shoyoroku, Di Tsang's most intimate. The case reads, Di Tsang asked Fa Yin, "What are you up to these days?" Fa Yin said, "I'm wandering at random." Di Tsang said, "What do you expect from wandering?" Fa Yin said, "I don't know." Di Tsang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Fa Yin was suddenly enlightened. The Shoyoroku, or Book of Serenity, is the third classical collection of koans that we study in our koan curriculum here. It was collected and commented upon by Master Wan Zong, a Sung Dynasty master, approximately contemporary with Wu Men, who compiled the Wu Men Guan. The Shoyoroku is very highly esteemed by the Soto sect of Zen, whereas the Wu Men Guan and the Hekigan Roku, the Blue Cliff Record, are more looked upon more favorably by the Rinzai sect. The Shoyoroku koans are less confrontive, less combative than one finds in the Hekigan Roku. And they are often more subtle as well. The two protagonists here are Di Tsang Gui Chen, whose Japanese name is Jizo. He lived from 869 to 928. And Fa Yin Wen Yi, whose Japanese name is Hogen, lived from 885 to 958. This puts them at the very end of the Tang era of China. Di Tsang was a disciple and Dharma heir of Xuan Sha, one of the most distinguished students of the prolific Zhui Feng. This makes him a kind of Dharma nephew of Yun Men and Ru Yin. Fa Yin, whom we see here as a student, is generally regarded as the founder of the fifth and last house of Chan. But he is considered by many, including possibly himself, as one who continued and enlarged the house of Xuan Sha, his Dharma grandfather. Fa Yin became ordained at the age of 7. He was a scholar with a great love of learning throughout his life and read widely in the literature of all the Buddhist sects, as well as the Confucian classics. He spent his early years with a Vinaya master. Later, he sought out a Chan teacher. One day, Fa Yin and some companions were caught in a snowstorm and took shelter at Di Tsang Monastery. One of those coincidences that may not be. As he was warming himself by the fire, the abbot, Di Tsang, questioned him. Di Tsang asked Fa Yin, "What are you up to these days?" Fa Yin said, "I am wandering at random." Di Tsang said, "What do you expect from wandering?" Fa Yin said, "I don't know." Di Tsang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Fa Yin was suddenly enlightened. What are you up to these days? Once again, we have that casual sounding question that is in fact anything but casual. What are we up to these days? These 2 days? What are we doing? How would you answer that? Do we sit here in our 2-day session with a purpose, an agenda? I'm here to get enlightened. I'm here to drop off body and mind. I'm here to do zazen. I'm here to sit. I'm just here. Fa Yen answers, I am wandering at random. Wandering at random. A lot of people don't like the idea of wandering at random. We want to have a purpose. To say that I am going around at random, or I don't know what I'm doing, is a confession of weakness. It's un-American. To wander at random is to waste your life, it is said. We want a plan, goals. The most admired people are those who set goals and accomplish them. Some goals might be laudable, self-improvement, self-reform, even enlightenment. Others might be questionable, wealth, power, life everlasting, great sex, unlimited booze. There is nothing intrinsically wrong with plans and goals. We put money away for college, for retirement. We study to learn a trade or a profession. We set goals in our practice. Siddhartha Gautama had a goal, a plan. He said, though only my skin, sinews, and bones remain, and my blood and flesh dry up and wither away, yet never will I, from this seat will I stir until I have attained full enlightenment. And he attained his goal. But if that plan, that goal becomes some kind of a fixed entity outside ourselves, then we are in great danger. We can set that kind of a goal, move heaven and earth to achieve it, and when we get there, we realize that wasn't what we really wanted after all. Be careful what you wish for. Or if we latch on to a single-minded quest, we could destroy ourselves and others. Captain Ahab says, the path to my fixed purpose is laid with iron rails whereon my soul is grooved to run. Over unsounded gorges, through the rifled heart of mountains, under torrent's beds, unerringly I rush. Naught's an obstacle, naught's an angle to the iron way. And we all know how that turned out. How important are these goals? And if we don't attain them, what then? Are we failures? For this Teisho, I'm going to draw upon my favorite book of scripture. It's entitled Zen Flesh, Zen Bones by Senzaki and Reps. The first story is called Publishing the Sutras, and it goes like this. Tetsugan, a devotee of Zen in Japan, decided to publish the sutras, which at that time were available only in Chinese. The books were to be printed with wood blocks in an edition of 7,000 copies, a tremendous undertaking. Tetsugan began by traveling and collecting donations for this purpose. A few sympathizers would give him 100 pieces of gold, but most of the time he received only small coins. He thanked each donor with equal gratitude. After 10 years, Tetsugen had enough money to begin his task. It happened that at that time, the Uji River overflowed. Famine followed. Tetsugen took the funds he had collected for the books and spent them to save others from starvation. Then he began again his work of collecting. Several years afterwards, an epidemic spread over the country. Tetsugen again gave away what he had collected to help his people. For a third time, he started his work. And after 20 years, his wish was fulfilled. The printing blocks which produced the first edition of sutras can be seen today in the Obaku Monastery in Kyoto. The Japanese tell their children that Tetsugen made 3 sets of sutras, and that the first 2 invisible sets surpass even the last. Now suppose Tetsugen had died before he had collected enough money to publish the sutras. Would that be a failure? A monk asked Master Qingzhang of Mount Xiangyan, "The Buddha of great penetration and perfect wisdom did zazen for 10 kalpas on the Bodhi seat, but could not attain Buddhahood. Why was this? Did this Buddha of great penetration and perfect wisdom fail to reach his goal?" Bernie Glassman, a Dharma heir of Maizumi Roshi, made a vow to end homelessness by the year 2000. He didn't make it. Was that a failure? If the Buddha had not gained enlightenment, but actually withered away to a desiccated corpse, would that have been a failure? What is it about Glassman, Tetsugen, or the Buddha? The very making of those vows fulfilled them in that moment. Why? Goal and the path are the same. To vow to walk the path is to already walk the path. It is a vow to act in the here and now. It is when we establish a goal or a plan outside of ourselves, in some other where or some other when, that we have missed it. The Tao is the great reality and the path to the great reality. It is not outside, not somewhere else or some when else. We sit here in our 2-day Shishin for all sorts of reasons. Do we meet a goal? How do we know? Well, we are here. We are sitting. We are doing zazen. What more reason and what more goal can there be? You are here to get enlightened. You are here to drop off body and mind. You are here to do zazen. You're here to sit. You are just here. You are just now. You just sit in this moment. All vows are fulfilled. At the end of every sitting, we chant the Bodhisattva vows. In that moment of chanting, the vows are fulfilled. Then we are truly wandering at random. We are wandering in the universe as the universe. Another story from that wonderful scripture. This one's called... Oh, I don't have the title here. Called a Zen dialogue, I think. Zen teachers train their young pupils to express themselves. 2 Zen temples each had a child protege. One child, going to obtain vegetables each morning, would meet the other on the way. "Where are you going?" asked the one. "I am going wherever my feet go," the other responded. This reply puzzled the first child, who went to his teacher for help. "Tomorrow morning," the teacher told him, "when you meet that little fellow, ask him the same question. He will give you the same answer. And then you ask him, 'Suppose you have no feet, then where are you going?' That will fix him." The children met again the following morning. "Where are you going?" asked the first child. "I am going wherever the wind blows," answered the other. This again nonplussed the youngster, who took his defeat to his teacher. "Ask him where he is going if there is no wind," suggested the teacher. The next day, the children met a third time. "Where are you going?" asked the first child. "I'm going to the market to buy vegetables," the other replied. Which of these two kids had the goal, the agenda? Which kid was wandering at random? "I am going wherever my breath takes me. I am going wherever one takes me. I am going wherever Mu takes me." Fa Yin wanders at random. To wander as Fa Yin wanders is not pointless or aimless. Wandering through life as a vow of practice and as a practice of the vow is very different from wandering according to the dictates and whims of the ego self. That is not random. Wandering at random requires discipline and great courage. To wander at random this way, to wander in the universe, to wander as the universe, is to express and embody the deepest purpose, the greatest truth. So here is Fa Yin wandering at random. Has he realized something? Or is he depressed in a dark place? "All my plans and schemes for enlightenment have come to nothing. Is my great spiritual journey a waste of time?" In our practice, especially in Sesshin, the dark night of the soul can be a harbinger of awakening. Di Tsang said, "What do you expect from wandering?" Fa Yin said, "I don't know." Fa Yin does not know. And what's more important, he knows that he does not know. Fa Yin is lost. And not only is he lost, he knows that he is lost. That's a good place to be. He has lost purpose, reason, agenda. And so he is wandering at random. Fa Yin wanders at random because he is truly in the present. He is totally present in the infinite here and the eternal now. He is not lost. He is found. He has liberated himself and all beings. He just doesn't quite know it. This "I don't know" arises from wandering at random. Random, the way we use it here, means unpredictable, unknowable. It is not a denial of cause and effect. It just means we can never know all the causes of our situation, and therefore we can never know the effects of our actions. Thus we all wander at random, whether we know it or not, because the world wanders at random. All beings wander at random. Di Tang said, "Not knowing is most intimate. Fa Yan was suddenly enlightened. Not knowing. Intimacy. Most intimate. Intimacy can be another word for enlightenment. But there is intimacy and then there is intimacy. One can become intimate with the basic laws of physics or chemistry through reading and hard study and laboratory work. One can become intimate with disease processes through years of medical training. This is the hard-won intimacy of knowing. But this knowing is always limited by the constraints of time, space, and karma. There is only so much that you can learn in one lifetime. It is said that the last man to know everything that could be known was Aristotle. After him, the burgeoning of scientific, geographical, astronomical knowledge put that accomplishment far beyond the ability of any one human being. This is not to say that such intimacy is of no value. We need it in a modern, complex society and culture. The engineer, the electrician, the farmer, the historian, the business person, the writer, the printer, the IT guys, and on and on and on. And the attainment of the knowing is accomplished with a plan, a goal, perseverance, and dedication. But when has all this knowing ever taken anyone beyond birth and death? I spent many years studying biology, thinking, like Victor Frankenstein, that maybe it could take me beyond birth and death. It didn't. Then there is the far deeper intimacy of not knowing. And that's a good deal harder to come by. It is this intimacy of not knowing that becomes clearly evident through our practice. So that's why we're here. That's what we're doing these days. This very effort is the dropping away of body and mind and of everything else, including the agenda. This is wandering at random. This is not knowing. This is the fulfillment of our vows. What does it take to live one's life this way? What does it take to let go of the ambitions, the desires around success, wealth, security, popularity, and all the rest? To come forth into one's life from that place where nothing stirs. In your zazen, give up even the idea of becoming a Buddha, says Dogen. Can you do that? Can you give up and let your practice take over? Let it take you where it will? Can you give up control? Can you give up the self? Robert Aitken Roshi says that zazen develops its own hands and feet. But you have to let it. You have to let it go. There is no corner of your existence that you can hang on to. We have only a day and a little bit. Trust the practice. Trust the breath in and out, the thoughts coming and going. Trust the here and now, the sun on the carpet, the sound of the traffic, the pain in your legs. Trust your true nature. Just wander at random. Just don't know. Ryokan gives us a capping verse. To find the Buddhist law, drift east and west, come and go, entrusting yourself to the waves. Sounds like a plan. Together with all beings, we realize the way.